Okay, so I want to welcome everyone here that came to our second in the series of the KKCR Be Heard Town Hall meetings. The subject for this first series of meetings is the economy, how it's affecting you, your neighbors, your family. We are going out into the community in order to get the comments and the concerns out on the table of the community. And so this first series of meetings is focused on the economy, and in particular the downturn in the economy. We hope to continue this series on an ongoing basis where we'll be going out in the community maybe on a quarterly basis or every 2 to 3 months and hosting meetings on different topics. And so if you have a topic of interest that you would like to raise for discussion, we set up a special website, www.kkcr.org/beheard. And on that website, you can click on a link to an email. It says, send us an idea for a topic, and that pops up your email client and automatically fills in the subject line with, here's an idea for a topic. Or you can post a blog. You can link to our blog site. We have a Twitter site account set up, and we also have set up a short economic survey. And so we're encouraging members of the community to go take the survey. It's probably about an 8 to 9 minute survey, under 10 minutes, hopefully. And we're starting to gather data. People have been going to that site already and have started submitting data, and we're starting to get some results on that. So the thing we're trying to do here is to get a better understanding of what are the top five concerns throughout the island-wide community regarding the economy. What are the issues and what can be done on a local level to really take control of our own destiny? And so with that as the introduction, we'll be just passing the microphone around and asking for your comments. So George was at our meeting on Tuesday night, and maybe I'll just start with you and you can say a few words and then pass it on down.
Well, thank you, Jerry, and we do appreciate the opportunity to get involved with the community. My name is George Costa. I'm the director of the Office of Economic Development for the County of Kauai. It's also a new position for me. I've been in the hospitality industry for a number of years. I started with the Coco Palms Hotel and worked my way up through the ranks and worked at various types of hospitality ventures, starting in the hotel business, and then I worked in condominium management and then also in the timeshare management. So I've pretty much seen the gamut, and I've started in the 70s, so I've kind of seen the whole industry evolved. And now with the county in the Office of Economic Development, we have in our office five specialists, and we deal with not only tourism, but the film industry. We have agriculture as part of our responsibility. Energy is another one, and workforce development. So we run the full gamut of what's happening, you know, in our economy on Kauai. And we have a small staff, but very energetic staff, and I commend them. Several of them have been with the Office of Economic Development for several years. I am interested in hearing what the community has to say, some of the challenges that they're going through right now, and see what we can do from the county level, as well as some of the ideas that have been brought forth in some of our meetings. And I try to make it a point to get out in the island community to listen to small businesses, to listen to some of the people in our Sunshine Markets, as you noticed. You know, with the way the economy is, there are many challenges, but there are also many opportunities. And so you see quite a few individuals or groups really fulfilling their entrepreneurship and coming out and doing whatever they can to sustain themselves. And so I'm interested to hear maybe of some of those stories at this meeting as well.
Great. Thanks, George. So if you would just state your first name, if you don't want to give your full name and where you're from, and any comments that you want to make.
Okay. My name is Leah. Aloha to everyone. And I've been on the island about 16 years. I've been a painter all my life for over 40 years. Went to art school. I lived in Africa for 10 years. It gave me a great wide vision of what true need and wealth and poverty are on the earth. And Kauai actually quite resembles West Africa, but without a lot of the diseases, frankly, which is a great blessing. And also it has wonderful color. And I think my chief focus is, I actually have in my little sack here a letter to be sent off to Maisie Hirono. She has raised a lot of money for charter school in Anahola and also a lot of construction projects in the islands. But what I see is that the infrastructure is really weak in connective ways on Kauai. And I think it's a very delicate thing because people on Kauai in particular are quite sensitive. We're all overcharged with many tasks in our lives here. You have to be careful and wise about how you use your time. The rhythm of the island is very delicate. So every single individual who lives on the island has a full task of how to use their time wisely, I think, and to know what their needs are and how they can participate in any one thing. My focus right now is that there really isn't any space on the island that invites people openly to participate in the arts. Everything that I notice gets very small and political very quickly. And I'm an open-ended artist. I have been my whole life. And I keep my own work going, and I notice things happening. Actually, I just, I don't know if the museum would be so grateful that I say this, but I'm going to. The museum has always been my kind of mama art home in terms of the arts, because there's a little space upstairs that has always invited artists to step in and participate and show their work. And there are all kinds of artists who have stepped in there and shown their work. So that, to me, is an open arena, which I think is what the vision of the arts are. If you don't have an open mind, you don't belong in the arts. And I was invited to have my fourth show in 2010, in October through December. So I had planned a trip to India, and I thought, you know, the islands need money. I'm going to spend my money here and take 3 months off, enjoy island life, and paint for this next show. And then the next show was canceled. So that shows you directly how I was sent into free fall. I had a little bit of money, and then I took a spill at the Honolulu airport. My fingers flipped all the way back. I have full movement again. But I haven't been able to go back to work right away, which is gardening. And I have a college education, so I don't really believe in, pardon the word, sucking the system to go on unemployment or some things that many people have no hesitation to do, because I leave that for people who are truly needy. Because I lived in Africa, I know that I can always eat from the land, that I have many friends who will always sustain and support me. And the line is a moving one about what poverty is. None of us on this island is truly poor. If you see people starving and dying every day, you really truly know what poverty is. So, but I do see that I think it's, this time is creating a lot of altered living for a lot of people. And this island is the greatest teacher in entrepreneurial ways. How, in that sense, everybody's an artist. How to start what, when, with who, where, and how, and come up with it. And then the main thing on Kauai, to me, is sustaining. There are very few long-term organizations, and we all nod to somebody who has been here very long, done their work, shown their true colors, and stayed with what they believe in.
Yeah, I had a question. You mentioned that one show that was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
What was it that, what caused it to be canceled?
I think the museum is, you know, a lot of museums all over the U.S., Western world, are in difficulty, in need, and often it's ironic to me that the first thing to go in troubled economy is the arts, because the arts are the energy. If people just target money, not much happens. It's like the cart before the horse to me. If you don't have the arts, you don't have any energy anywhere. And that's what's happened. It's kind of a great cosmic joke in a sense. I mean, that's how I perceive things as an artist. I don't mean to make light of people's troubles, but my whole life I've had a lot of people around me who have just gone for money and nothing else. And when I was growing up, money was an aspect of living, but just an aspect. You know, you had full education, sports, arts were equal to the sports. You have to use the mind and the whole body, not just the body. The body is very focused on in Western culture. And to me, the whole world globally is a completion of everything. Certain cultures focus more on the mind than the body. But, you know, all of it is necessary. And I just feel like it's kind of out of balance. I think the museum is restructuring and regrouping, and they've had a great challenge with many people leaving at once, and then they had staffing issues, and I think they're doing as well as they can. I'm still teaching workshops there. But, you know, ever since I've been on this island, I've used my own employment money to do whatever I do in the arts. I've never really received any kind of compensation. And that's a sacrifice of love that people make, you know.
Going back to your comment for a moment about the kind of the arts being sort of the first thing to suffer, I do know that at the state level, which trickles down to the county level, the grant funding is in question right now, particularly the State Foundation on Culture and the Arts. And we've all received letters saying that there's a delay in the process this year in figuring out the application process, and whether, frankly, we're all kind of wondering if there will even be people there to help administer the grants. So I know what you're saying when you say, you know, the arts are kind of the first thing to suffer.
But also many of the art organizations have nice offices. People drive fancy cars, the setting, the desks. There's a lot there that has to be paid for. And sometimes a lot of the funding goes to people who take care of the art organizations, not the artists. So sometimes you don't find a lot of artists around those organizations. I'm speaking my truth.
Yeah, no, that's what we want here.
Okay.
All right, well, thank you. So maybe we can pass the microphone over. Just again, state your first name, where you're from.
My name is Ken Taylor. And I was lucky 5 years ago to retire, and made a decision to move here to the island to pursue my hobby.
Where did you move from?
I come from Santa Barbara, California.
Okay.
Another nice place in the world. But I was born and raised there, and I saw a lot of good things happen. I saw a lot of bad things happen, and my friends now ask me if I'm homesick and ready to come back, and I tell them, you know, I don't really think that I've left. Santa Barbara and the island here was so similar, where we had the ocean, development along the ocean, and then the mountains behind. But the real issues here, and I've really been disappointed to see how poorly state and county government have dealt with cultural issues, I feel strong that we have to start doing a better job of taking care of what cultural issues are left and before they're gone completely. And so that's an issue that I get around the community and talk about often.
Now, when you say cultural issues, are there? Can you cite some specifics?
Well, there's a number of things. Yesterday at the county council meeting, there was an issue right down here in Poipu that should have been addressed many, many years ago, and unfortunately it hasn't been, and it needs... there's a local group that's trying to get the county to allow them to take over maintaining and cleaning up and eventually get it so they could have public open to the public. Right now it's pretty much closed to the public, and I think that's one issue. We have another issue that's hot right now is in the Wailua area, where the county wants to put the bike path down on the beach, and that's a very heavily area where bodies have been buried, and there's some real issues there for the local people, and I think they should be respected and dealt with. The bike path can be put around and back where they're saying, and that whole area of Waimea or Wailua is a tremendous cultural situation, but it can be addressed by putting the bike path to the backside of the property then, rather than up on the beach. Those are a couple examples, but the other thing that's really a concern to me is the future, because we probably economically peaked in every aspect in 07. We're never going to get back to that level. And the end of cheap oil is going to change our lifestyles into the future. And
now, when you say we peaked, are you referring specifically to Kauai or Hawaii or the
entire world, the whole world?
Okay.
And so I was just looking at a new report that came out of Honolulu and that has all kinds of statistics of population and all employment and what's going to be happening up out to 2035. And I was totally blown away. This is a brand new report, and everything's based on what has happened in the past. And prior to 07, we could do that. We always had cheap oil to pull us out of these economic downturns. We don't have that anymore. And we're going to see a lot of this up and down. Economy bounce up a little bit, and then the oil's going to bounce up and knock the economy down, and it's going to go back and forth. And the real problem for not addressing this properly is not for old goat like me, but the young people. I'm terribly concerned that we're not doing the right thing for them. And until everybody in the community and the leaders, statewide, countywide, federal government, start to really address this issue properly and start realizing that we're not. I mean, in 2007, 72% of the gross domestic product was consumption. 72%. And of that, over 50% of it was on credit cards. Now, that's not a sustainable situation. And with the oil prices going up, we're never going to be able to continue to do that. And so it's imperative that George and the rest of the county leaders and state leaders start to wrestle with this thing and start working with some of us in the community to start realize, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? Because if we don't, you know, being out here on the island 2,500 miles from the mainland, it's like being on a spaceship. And when we can't depend on the outside world, how are we going to sustain ourselves? We need to get into more community activities of growing our own food. Something like 95% of our food today is imported. When that ship stops coming, what are we going to do? And, you know, they say, well, young people don't want to be farmers. It's a lot of work. But there's coming a time when there's not going to be a choice. We can live without food for maybe 30 days. We can live without water for 3 days. We can live without electricity forever. Yes, it's not convenient compared to what we've had. But reality is, you need the water, you need food and a little shelter, and you can exist. And the time is coming, and the sooner we start planning, the better it's going to be for all the young people. And to understand that we're not going to have the automobile like we have it today. We're not going to have televisions and computers and all of these things. We take them for granted today, but the reality is it isn't going to be here forever. And
You know, at our meeting the other night, this issue actually came up from a number of the people there about sustainability and how does Kauai wrestle with becoming more self-sustaining so that we do not have to rely upon outside sources.
And we can do it. I mean, we can grow bamboo here for timber, for construction. We don't have to depend on them bringing lumber from the mainland or wherever. And, you know,
yeah, bamboo is a wonderful hardwood.
Well, it is. And, you know, a new shoot coming up today is ready to harvest in 4 years. It reaches its maximum strength in 4 years. So every 4 years, that new shoot can be harvested. Plus, you can eat a lot of those shoots, too. So there's a compound thing. And this is another thing that I'm really concerned about with the county looking at identifying prime ag land. As I understand it now, the county, the state, has identified about 50,000 acres on the island as agricultural land. And about 30,000 of that is somewhere in that neighborhood is considered prime. We will know shortly when this is all done. But I'm really concerned what they are planning to do with the 20,000 or so that isn't considered prime, because those are the lands where we can grow fruit trees, we can grow bamboos, and we can grow these other things that we're going to need. And if the idea of identifying prime ag land is to do away with the rest of it for some other purpose, then I'm very concerned, and everybody should be concerned, because everything out there is, you know, we know that the plantations have destroyed the soils on this island, and it's going to take a lot of time and work to get them back. But it can be done. You can't just write them off. And so the hillsides and slopes, I mean, you go to many countries. I spent a couple years in Japan, and the hillsides are terraced, and they grow all kinds of things. And we can do the same when the time is coming, when we're going to have to do those things. And now's the time to plan while we still have a little bit of energy, oil, that we can use to make the future much better and make it sustainable for the young people. Those are the ones that we really need to be concerned about. And we're cheating them. by not addressing these issues at this point in time.
Okay. All right, very good. Thanks, Ken, right? Yeah. Thank you, Ken. Great comments. Mary.
Mary Stone. Yeah, I'm from the Kalaheo area, and been here since October of 97. And, I came here thinking that I'd start in my old age business in my home, taking care of little children. But I guess I don't have that big entrepreneurial spirit. So I worked for other people. And so now I'm pretty well completely retired and finding useful things to do that I with my own time. I live in an elder housing situation, and one of the things we've been talking about for a while is having a community garden there. But communication and getting people together when you have a lot of diversity, a lot of different life experiences is a challenge. And I liked Leah's thing about what I see the value of art and why I think it's important and why I really like KKCR with its volunteers, multiplicity of volunteers, is that the arts encourage creativity and bringing a new, fresh approach, having 360 out into the universe ways of looking at things. And it's important that we have, you know, reliable, this wonderful community radio station as a, you know, 24/7 means of communicating and finding out, you know, the talk shows. I find out what other issues and other members of our island community think are significant. So that part of communication and fostering creativity to me is real important. And along with Ken, I think the importance of the culture, I mean, the community radio is so great because you get to know the diversity of our community. You learn to respect. And I was getting my asthma patch at the Qigong, and Mayor Cavallo was there, and he, you know, jumped up on the platform, and he's such a wonderful, smiling, great kind of leader in the sense that he's smiling and he has that kind of can-do attitude. Master Hung, and he gave each other a big, big hugs. And Cavallo said that he was looking forward to having more of this wonderful gift that Master Hung brings to the community and has really empowered so many members on different diverse parts of our community. The host culture is that way. I mean, it's very, Master Hung said that, used Barack Obama as the example of the host culture having those values of caring and giving and compassion. And I think that's one of the great things that we who choose to live and call Hawaii our home value. And I think, as Ken said, the importance of the host culture is something that we need to emphasize with our children, with the next generation coming along, so that they know that maybe working in the Kalaloi is hard work, but that's going to take care of you and your auntie and your uncles and your tutus and your community. And it isn't how much, you know, bling you have on how much money and how much stuff you have, but it's how many people in your community you know, you love, you respect, you interact with in a positive way, which is, you know, kind of one of the challenges that I look upon at our Kalaheo elder housing, getting the community garden going when we've got people there who are in their 80s who can do their little garden immediately around, but the idea of going, so it's just you know, the different ways of communicating and getting together with people and honoring and respecting them and being able to give to our young people that idea that caring and respecting and being part of our present and part of our future. So I guess then the other thing going along kind of with an issue that Ken and I have shared is the KIZC now wants to raise the rates, and I know that there are aspects of that are justified, at least Ben Sullivan justifies them, but I'm not real happy with the way the CEO, Randy Hee, feels and some of the attitude of, I feel, I don't know them intimately, in terms of talking about alternative energy and the viability and the commitment to the new technologies. I mean, it was interesting in yesterday's Garden Island. Senator Hoosier was talking about issues that are prominent as compared to the vice governor, Iona. And so Hoosier was talking very strongly about the need of sustainability and getting away from the service industry of tourism and the complexity of that issue of sustainability, but the real need for us to look at being able, energy-wise and food-wise, to take care of ourselves, whereas Iona's, and the technology aspect of that, whereas Iona, and I wasn't quite clear on that, the technology tax, and that the need to, both people felt the need for better education. And so, yeah, I think that's maybe a big issue is the education issue. Because the young people are, their values, what do they think is important? What do we want them to think is important? So just bringing them much more into the communication mix, which I think KKCR through Jimmy Trujillo is doing a good job at. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks, Mary. We're going to pass the microphone down.
My concerns, I'm going to start out with education. My grandson's in seventh grade at Kapaa Middle School. I realized the Kilauea kids and the Hanalei kids showed up to middle school this year. His class size has doubled, and it's not from just those kids showing up. There's decisions being made about class sizes and teachers, and it is to the detriment of our children.
They doubled to what? From what to
what? Well, he used to have like four kids at a table. Now there's eight. There's kids sitting straddling bars at the table, and they all have to face forward so the teacher can work with them. So it's just constant yammering and yattering. And last year was hard enough trying to get him to focus, and this year is going to be even more difficult. My other grandson is turning 16. He's on the computer show, KKCR. He's opting to get his GED rather than stay in Kapaa High School because it has nothing to offer him. There's no computer classes, there's no high tech, there's nothing. So I'm kind of disappointed about that, but it's the only way that he can go over to KCC and take classes, which is what he would like to do. So there's a lack of opportunity for our kids. Now, when we talk about needing green industries here, but we have nothing to offer to get them here. We have no infrastructure, no trained workers, which gets back to education, etc. Think about the way the Recovery Act money has just been spent. $20 million is going to resurface the airport runway. Now that's jobs for probably young men, probably mostly local, and yes, they will be working, but what kind of a profession is that for them? You know, we don't want our children to all have no other option than to go in to road work and maintenance and things on this island. That's crazy. As an example, $175,000 was given to Ho'olauhui, $20 million for the airport. Let's tax the airport 1% of that and give it to Ho'olauhui, which is a much, in my mind, taking care of our kids. And also want to think, maybe we need to think big, but not big stores, big hotels, big government. And in that, and I said it before, I'm a Quaker, I'm not for the military. but I am a retired scientist. And one of the things we have here that has been stolen by Maui, if you'll give me that leeway, is the Northwest Hawaiian Islands National Monument. That is our land. That is the Niihau Kauai connection that all came. Kauai is the end result of the earth finally taking enough time to sit still long enough and make an island that came all the way to the surface in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Now, the Northwest Hawaiian Island National Monument is PMRF's playground. The people who monitor it are on Maui. They're at NOAA. I see no reason why we can't build an industrial park here that brings in green industries, that brings in NOAA. Research facilities could have a visitor center for people to understand about the Hawaiian Islands and the national monument that's out there, could protect it and take care of it. And it gives intellectual and scientific benefits to our kids. It brings more professionals onto the island. We're going to have to bring them in because we don't have them. We haven't trained our kids to do these jobs. I'd like that to change. So why not make a clean industrial park, get green industries, get us off of oil, give our kids a place they can work during the summer that has some meaning, where they'll really learn some things, and give them a different opportunity. So that's, and my last one that I'd like to say is, how about the county just saying no more building without solar power, at least water heaters? I mean, that's crazy. Just, it's very easy. Okay, from now on, you want a permit, you have to put in solar. And if you'd like to continue the benefit to the homeowner or the person that's retrofitting to putting in solar, that's a great idea. But it should be a requirement also for any big box store going in here. As Costco did, it should all have solar on the top. And there should be solar for KIUC, and I know it's in the 2050 plan, but I don't see them doing very much about developing it. And right now, there is money from the Recovery Act, very low interest long-term loans. They could qualify very easily, but I don't see them taking any initiative. So I'd like the county to step up to the plate on education, getting some new industry here that's clean, that will help train our children, thinking about repossessing the Hawaiian National Monument, the archipelago, and putting some building codes in order that address some of the problems that we're all talking about. And that, too, creates jobs. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, I didn't identify myself. My name is Lynn McNutt, and I'm from Kapahi.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and this is the second in our installment of Be Heard Town Hall Meetings. This particular meeting was held on Thursday, August 13th in Kaloa. Mahalo for listening.
Okay. My name is Donovan Kabibi, and I'm a resident here in Kaloa Town. Historically, culturally, Hawaii has been kind of the leader of technologies, you know, one of the first places in the world to have electricity, one of the first flushing toilets in the world existed here in Hawaii. Solar energy was, Hawaii was one of the first places solar energy was developed, the whole technology. One of the things that I'd like to see is for, you know, our community, Kauai, to become that model, that example for being the forefront, the leader of developing new energy sources, technologies, developing this whole new green industry that's going on, how to create new uses for our trash and our recycling energies, you know. And with all the people and the different strokes of life that exist here on Kauai, the people who come from the different strokes of life, we have the entrepreneurial mind frame and the natural resources here just in the people power and the brain power to kind of facilitate some of those areas and actions. One of the things that I'd like to strongly see developed on Kauai is a partnership with some of the other, you know, the economic development program, the county council, and some of these other places to develop a small business incubator where people can come with their ideas and get advice on how to make that business grow, actually have a facility where we can come and set up our shop at a minimum cost or a percentage and actually be a partner in the operation of the county as a member of the small business incubator. So if I have a business idea that I want to develop, I have a place to go and ask for advice and direction in developing my business idea and getting it involved with the community and not, you know, and finding ways to not outsource the stuff that we need, because we have, you know, Kauai at one time was 100% self-sustained and exported much to the rest of the world. We exported sugar, fruit, labor, all kinds of stuff. And it seems to me that in the last 100 years, we've taken a complete 180 turn to where we are no longer self-sufficient. We depend on stuff being shipped in here from every part of the world. And if, like he said, like Ken said, if the boat stops, everybody here is in trouble right now. The other thing is, economic development only happens when the people are educated. And if the people don't have the education and the knowledge to expand their thinking and their natural resources, then there will never be any economic development. So for me to see the county more directly involved in some of the planning that's going on and the funding that's going on, the last thing in times like these, the last place that funding should be cut from is our educational programs, period. You know, arts can suffer a little bit. Our infrastructure can suffer a little bit. But if the people aren't getting educated, then none of those other areas that are suffering a little bit can be healed. And that ultimately, to me, is the key word of what we're trying to do on Kauai right now, because things seem a little broken right now, and we're all trying to find solutions to heal our community and bring it back to some kind of glory that once was, that seems to be, you know, lacking right now for us. And I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Yeah, excellent points.
Nui.
Brother Lou.
Aloha. Thank you, Radio KKCR.
And thank you for being here and being our video guy.
Yeah. My name is Louis Kabibi. I was just listening to this whole thing. This is the second, of course, going back to the first session. And I just wanted to share with everyone here a little background of what our lifestyle, well, my lifestyle was growing up. We are the generation of the last of our kupuna. We are the product of our kupuna, this generation, my generation, your generation too, George. And that idea, I mean, all these things that we're talking about was natural for us. You know, one of the rules was don't take more than you need. When you go to the mountains to take, make sure you put back twice as much. I've lived that. I lived that lifestyle. All these things was, you know, taught to me by my kupuna. Whenever we moved to a house or a new house, of course, we couldn't afford to buy a house, so we rented from place to place. And when it was time for us to move, the landlords were sad, because the first thing that we needed to do was open a garden, make a garden. We're taught to make a garden, no matter where we went, whether it was in a pot, in what is in a tire, dirt with tire, you know. And we always respected the property of our landlord, and we made it twice as beautiful as what it when we came. These are the lessons, I think, that it can be turned around again. Why? Because we need to look at the resource of our ohana, or our people on the island. I also donate my time to Salvation Army, as well as Hoike and KKCR. But I also take care of an elderly person now, and I also take care of a 10-year-old child because of homelessness and also uncontrollable urge to for this elderly person to deal with his pain medicine the way he sees fit. But very educated man. You know, he's a very educated man. Our kupuna has so much knowledge to share, and it's sad to see some of them, like this kupuna I take care of, shut in and not being able to share his knowledge. But he does share his knowledge with me. He is a elderly contractor. So he has skills with carpentry, painting, plumbing, all of these things. I think we need to look at our kupuna and the ones that's retired and think that they are, you know, they just come here and play cards and stuff. I think there should be a resource center for them to interact with people, like Donovan was saying, you know, retired bookkeepers, you know, who could come and help with the business aspect of the entrepreneurs that's coming on. Oh, by the way, I'm an entrepreneur for 20 years now. I own my own business. I run a silk screening business in Hanapepe. But I also used to work for the state as computer tech for the schools as well as the hotel business. And that was also taught to me by a kupuna. You know, this is years ago. He told me, pick up the computer. And I was like, oh, no, I don't like to do that. You know, it was like, and what was so funny was when I got to the point where I was actually the only local tech on the island, Hawaiian tech, I tried to share this opening with the other kids, Hawaiian kids, and they were pretty scared of computers. I was kind of amazed. You know, I told them, I'll be right there. You can learn, you know, come. You know, we're talking about 30-year-olds, you know, who's feel like, oh, that's it for them. They don't need to learn computers or anything. I'm not trying to say that computers is what we need, but I'm just trying to look at, trying to get to educating those people also. But mainly just interacting again with Keiki as well as Kupuna and you know, understanding their knowledge and what they have. So, and the culture here, our Hawaiian culture, has many, many lessons to learn and understand about self-sustainability. You know, just, gosh, the fish ponds, that were here, they were made for a certain reason. The water, how they took care of the water, how it was shared evenly, how it was respected, that after a certain height, you cannot go past, you cannot go up in the mountains and go take a bath, you know, because the water was sacred, you know. You actually would get killed for doing that because you're disturbing. The higher you get up to the mountain, the more sacred it becomes. And Hawaiians believe that was sacred to the gods. So the water, everything that comes down was from Keakua. So all these lessons that is within the Hawaiian culture, I, you know, try to help my community out the best I can to relieve stress, to let them know that, hey, try touching the earth, try digging the dirt, try getting your hands dirty. What you mean? Go to the lo'e, look, uncle, he's old already. Go over there, go touch him. See what it's like. Stand there, you know, changing these kids' lives, trying to change their lives like that. So, again, utilizing our Hawaiian culture in its, you know, most fullest, interacting with the farmers that way, interacting with the kupuna that can sit down and re-educate and not re-educate, but to share that time of their life. They're still there, so. I just wanted to, you know, inject a little bit of the past and also what the future, you know, holds for us. Just coming back from Japan, It was pretty interesting to see their recycle program. Everybody has to recycle. You separate everything. Every day is a different day for separation. If you bring the wrong thing, like I did, there's a nice note in there for us foreigners telling us that you brought the wrong thing today. Take it back. But tomorrow's this day. Why can't I just leave it there? You know, no, you can't do that either. So I've learned to be the last guy to bring my trash or my recyclables. They don't call it trash there. It's all recyclable. So I learned to look and see what was on the corner, and you have your own specific corner for that community. You do not skip the line, and just because they're doing paper and you got lots of paper, you're going to bring paper all the way to the other community. You cannot do that. Yeah. And you'd be surprised, the watch guards that's around that little recycle bin, these little old ladies, you know. I experienced that in Japan. Another thing that I experienced that is ongoing after going to see my really dear kupuna off, who just passed away on the Big Island, was we went to deliver some trash in, I think, was the Hilo trash transfer station, and they had that thing that you're talking about. Everything was, you know, looked at and hey, you know, bro, what is that? Come bring this here. And they had this big building. Well, it wasn't a building. I'd say it was like a tent, I think. I'm trying to remember. But it was pretty interesting because they had the metal here, they had plastics here, and the magazines, all kind of clothes that was at the transfer station. Yeah. So, you know, they'd be checking what you have every day. They'd be checking it and go, oh, you know what, bring this here, drive your truck down here, we'll help you unload this because we're going to put this in this section and we're going to put that in that section. And there's like, and it was so busy that they only allow so many cars to come in because, you know, it's like dangerous already because they cannot just allow people. I mean, so much people coming in, looking at clothes, radios, all kind of stuff that was there. So that was happening right at the transfer station. So that was pretty interesting. Another thing that clubs might want to think about was, you know, actually, it might sound kind of weird, but, you know, these guys are actually standing at the transfer station because a lot of us don't recycle. So they were actually unloading their trash for them, taking out the plastic bottles, and they were making a big haul in one day at one transfer station. Now imagine if your club could take over four transfer stations, helping these people, okay, we'll unload your stuff, not scolding them like, hey, you should recycle this thing, you know, but, you know, actually telling them thank you. You know, thank you. We're going to use this for our club. And that money went for that good use. So that was pretty interesting, too, to have these kids that was there going, oh, yeah, you know, you get bottles in there, you know, plastic bottles. We're going to take them over here for our club and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's another good idea. One more thing about what Donovan was talking about, again, that center of being able to create that entrepreneurship, because now things are starting to blossom for entrepreneurs now because of losing your job, you know, but still having a talent to, you know, gosh, this guy that I take care of, he makes these coconut clubs, you know, out of golf clubs. And it's gone all over the world. Yeah, he sends them all over the world. But he's gotten, you know, a little bit older, so, he can share his knowledge with that and, you know, send that to the next generation and stuff like that. Yeah, they're really creative. If we can allow them to express themselves through craft and of course, the free swap meets, yeah? So, and then one more thing was the first birthday. You're talking about the first birthday march. Traditionally, it wasn't just one family made all the food. That's how it is now. Yeah? The whole one family puts in the money. All the kids of that family puts in the money and they prepare the food, like how you're saying. That's a lot of money. Traditionally, you was supposed to bring food. You always brought something to eat. So, and seeing that come to life was really interesting because Donovan also belongs to the PA. I hate to say martial arts or anything like that, but it's a Hawaiian cultural school that teaches vision and insight on what our kupuna was about for honoring our life, our bodies and our life. And in his class, there was 99 students, 99. So imagine the pa'ina. Everyone brought something. You had to bring something. But it was organized, so you didn't have a lot of everything. I mean, gosh, that pa'ina was something else. It was something else. And I understand what you're saying, Marge, and it makes it more beautiful and more meaningful. Yeah, and it's not just the word potluck. It was understood. You know, you don't go somebody's house and no bring nothing, you know. And now again, the generation now, it sounds so funny because I'm sounding like my grandfather now, you know. It's so funny because my grandfather did not want electricity, the telephone, TV. The only thing he wanted to hear was the ukulele. That's it. Playing live music, that was it, you know. That was the only thing he allowed sound in his house. Other than that, just good speaking, talking, whatever they were talking about. Again, going back to educating, I think even hands-on, looking at our resources that we have here that we can offer as hands-on education, yeah? Looking at our low-E farmers and allowing them, you know, creating with them a program for our keiki here, making it part of the curriculum, yeah? Touch that dirt. Step in that mud, you know. It's okay. But anyway, again, mahalo nui for allowing me to share this time with everybody. And mahalo, Jerry, for bringing this Be Heard program. And mahalo, Huike, for allowing me to film.
And mahalo to you for your comments. And one of the things that's, having been at our first meeting two nights ago and tonight, there is a common theme that's starting to emerge, and it's one centered very much around self-sustaining, becoming self-sustaining. And one of the things that is really encouraging to me as I listen to community members talking is that there's not I haven't heard a lot of just idle complaining about the way things are. When we started these meetings, I had no idea how they were going to turn out. But what I hear is a lot of people talking about a vision for the future and focusing there rather than on the problems of the past. And that's really encouraging to me. So, again, I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight and being here. Thanks again to George for being here. That's it.
That's a wrap.